You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and today with me is the one and the only church planning ninja himself, Peyton Jones. What's up, Peyton?
Hey, man, it's good to be here.
Yes. Peyton is, if you're not familiar with him, he's a veteran church planner. He's also the author of quite a few books, including Church Plantology. Peyton works over at New Breed Training now, where he provides church planner training, and he also works with Through the Word Bible app that engages hundreds of thousands of people with Bible teaching. So Peyton, we're really glad that you're here today, and we're going to talk about this subject that probably, I'm going to guess, you and I have bumped into quite a lot as we've interacted with church planters. It's the subject of entitlement, and the title of this episode is Nobody Owes You Support. So let's start off. Let me just ask you, sometimes church planters get a sense of entitlement, like I said, about monetary support. They think they're owed it. They think someone should pay them. They think the churches owe them support. Is this appropriate in any way, shape, or form, Peyton?
Well, I mean, I've always kind of been under the impression that not only does nobody owe me anything, but you know, I'm kind of surprised if they want to give me something. I've kind of been the church planner that, case in point, yesterday someone wanted to fund something, and I got all embarrassed about it and insecure, and started texting them back. No, people don't owe us anything. I think there is a sense of entitlement with some church planners about this subject, and it actually works against them more than they think.
Yeah, it really does. That's a key point. I think I hadn't thought to bring that out, but it is. There's nothing more endearing or nothing that makes somebody want to support you more than a genuine sense of you being genuinely grateful for anything that would be tossed your way. The truth is, you know, the ministry work you do is a privilege. It's not something that you're entitled any compensation for or any kind of gift or support for. Well, sometimes people feel this requirement because they, you know, they see so many churches supporting other churches. They see so many church planting networks out there and so many entities that are pro church planting and pro missions and pro gospel, that it seems like all those organizations should be supporting. And so, you know, we're in a day, my suspicion is when you got into church planting, there wasn't nearly as much support as there is now. Certainly wasn't that much support when I got started. Now with all the support that's out there, it's a little harder for church planters not to feel that sense of entitlement, don't you think?
Yeah, I got to be honest, like when I came into the Southern Baptist, it was like someone, it was like if you've been living in a trailer, and I've had this experience before when we were doing a house remodel, taking cold showers for 6 months, It was like finally coming back into hot water again. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe, and I had never, ever been in an organization that actually valued church planners. So much so, I'll tell you this, the first time I got my NAM letter, it had a book, it had a gift card, and it had a letter. And just the words that I read in that letter that said, thank you for what you're doing. I'm not even making this up. I sat at my kitchen counter and wept. I had never, ever had anyone thank me for church planning. I'm getting emotional right now just thinking about it. It meant the world to me. Someone valued me, gave me something, and said, we appreciate you. And I had been church planting for years, like on multiple continents. And so to finally get that was like, wow. But I remember just thinking like, this is James Bond's secret headquarters, man, NAM headquarters, going into that and seeing that there was a whole like system built to support planners. I will say the entire time that I served at NAM, I never took that for granted. And I would remind planners, you guys don't understand. For those of us that weren't always in this ecosystem, this is rare.
Yeah. Sometimes I run into planters that are from other tribes, and there we talk about the distinctions between, you know, how the SBC has operated when it comes to resourcing and sharing money between churches and that sort of thing. And they almost have a, like a, it's too good to be true sort of attitude, toward it. Like, yeah, that's, there's some catch to that. There's gotta be something not right about that. And so, I'm always, you know, newly grateful for the type of support that churches offer one another inside of our tribe of churches, when that's the case. But, you know, a lot of churches have allocated money in their budget to support missions and church planting now too. I mean, I think when I became a Christian 20 plus years ago, I didn't know many or any churches who had like a church planting line item in their budget, but many churches do now. So they could say no to a church planter's request, really, for a variety of reasons, though. So there, just because money is sitting there in somebody's account, a church's account, to allocate to church planting, doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to give it to you, or they should even give it to you. What are some of the reasons that a church might not want to give it to you?
Oh gosh, those are so varied. I mean, church planting assessments can be the death knell of a church planner. Mm-hmm. I've been in church planting assessments where the guy's model looks so good, and everything he says, it's like something out of the latest, hippest, trendiest church planting book. And it all sounds so wonderful until that one question, which usually was an immediate fail.
Yeah.
What are you doing now in your community? And if there was no action, we're like, okay, that's all smoke and no fire, right? Like, that's great. You're going to tell us about what you're going to do, but I don't actually believe in you enough right now to fund you, because you you talk a good game, but you don't walk it. Right. I would say that, you know, probably the number one reason people are going to fund you, though, is because they believe in you. Exactly what I just said. They believe in you. And many people who may not know about church planning, but have had an experience with you as a planner, I mean, as a minister, maybe you're their kid's youth pastor. Maybe you were an assistant pastor at the church. Maybe they've just watched you around non-believers. Maybe you've never been in ministry, but they look at you and they go, I know you. And my money's on you. You're my winning horse. I'm going to place my bet there.
Yeah. 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 That's a really good point. Church planners don't often consider the responsibilities of a sending church pastor when they approach a sending church pastor asking them for money. They don't think about the stewardship responsibilities. They don't take a moment to put themselves in the shoes of that pastor. What should the church planter keep in mind as he approaches a church for support when he starts to interact with the pastor?
Yeah, I think people don't like to invest in things that fail, right? Yeah. So if you're going to approach people for funding, I mean, the most important thing is you have to give a vision that's going to excite not only that leader, but the leader the team that the leader needs to go to. So if there's a board that releases the funds, it's kind of like, you know, this is how it works in the publishing world, right? Yeah. Like, I have to sell my book to an agent first.
Yeah.
The agent gets excited. The agent knows, okay, I can go to the publishers, I hear 1,000 pitches a day.
Yeah.
I can get them excited. I see that. So the pastor knows, because he's talked to, you know, you're a dime a dozen. As a planner, he's got people pitching him all the time. So when you come, there has to kind of be that hook. There has to be that return on investment. The vision has to be exciting.
Yeah,
he has to know that you're accountable, that you have that you've thought through. Like even like a business startup, when you have people that are like venture capitalists, if they're going to fund a project, they have to know that the Yahoo in front of him that makes all the promises, oh, it's going to be the next Twitter, it's going to be the next biggest thing.
Right.
He has to know, have you thought about this? And one of the other questions they'll ask is, how many startups have you failed at?
Yeah.
So one of the things they're going to want to know from a church planner is, have you failed before? Mm-hmm. I personally, Clint, I don't trust a leader who hasn't failed.
Yeah.
I need to know you failed before, because experience is the best teacher. And once you failed, you got a bit of wisdom under your belt then. I want to see you fail first. And then once you've come back from that, kind of like Peter, I think you're a winning horse then.
That's interesting, Peyton. So church planners, you know, when they're approaching sending churches, they often, you know, like we mentioned before, they have that sense of entitlement. But I mean, I think one of the things to keep in mind is that, just like we talked about a few minutes ago, there are a variety of reasons that a church plant or that a sending church pastor might say no. And it's not just that they don't believe the gospel, or they don't love missions, or they don't love Jesus, or they're self-centered, or, you know, inwardly focused. It could actually mean, and I know this is a crazy thing to mention, it could actually mean they don't believe in you. I mean, it could mean that you don't seem to have a viable plan. It could mean, like in your case, that they don't have enough experience under their belt. And so it doesn't seem like you don't seem like a great horse to bet on, so to speak. So I think that's a thing that church planners very rarely consider when they walk in, and that sending church pastors see really plainly and obviously when a church planner comes in. Now, for most pastors I know, if they really wanted to do something, they could find some way to support. And so there's a good chance that if you're walking out of a pastor's office after having a conversation and that pastor has determined not to support you in some way, then there's a chance that they in some ways lack confidence in your aptitude or your calling or your ability to pull off what you've said you want to do. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it kind of goes into the giant pot of stew, right? Maybe the potatoes aren't right, or the meat, you know, didn't marinate. Well, for whatever reason, you're that pot of stew. And there could be a bunch of different elements. Yeah, it might be your strategy's terrible. Might be that he asks you about things and you look like a deer in the headlight, like you weren't prepared for the meeting. You know, it's like when you watch Shark Tank and someone goes on Shark Tank and they start mentioning things, and the entrepreneur, to be, looks just completely dumb. Like, and then they start making stuff up and it's obvious. That is very undermining. You need to actually think through the questions. And I would say, I do this again, back to writing. When I'm writing a book, I have something called the Inklings group on Facebook, where I have people take apart my manuscript and kick it and punch it. I say, punch my baby, kick it, make it bleed. And then at the end, you're going to give me a better manuscript. And when you tell me what's wrong with it, well, I think you need to do that with a leader or pastor you trust, maybe someone who does support you, but you say, hey, I'm about to run the gauntlet and I need you to hit me with all the questions I'm not thinking of that could catch me out, so I can work through these and not just have a smoke screen, but actually give thoughtful, prayerful consideration to these questions and go to this meeting prepared, because there's nothing worse than thinking of the right answer 5 minutes later, but being caught out, not able to articulate it, which happens. Sometimes you might actually be prepared in your heart, or, you know, actually on paper, but in the moment you're caught out and you can't get your thoughts together.
Yeah. Under the subject or heading of putting yourself in the sending pastor's shoes, or in the pastor you're talking to, I mean, I think also, in addition to the things that you mentioned, I think you've got to remember that this pastor has a stewardship responsibility. He has to answer to the Lord and to his congregation for the stewardship of the funds that he's been entrusted. They've already, in almost every circumstance, allocated a certain amount of those resources for the mission of God. So it's really not a question like, are they willing to allocate resources for mission? The answer is yes to that. The question is, are you the best, you know, place to put those resources? Are you the best investment, if we're using a financial image or something there? So the putting yourself in the shoes of that pastor means if they're saying no to you, it might be that factors that could be involved in that, you know, very likely have to do with the fact that they think for their congregation, they want to invest those resources in a different place, not that they don't want to invest in the expansion of the gospel at all. And so I think it's really important for you to recognize that when you walk in and have a bit of, you know, contriteness and humility when you address it.
I really like that whole concept of putting yourself in the shoes of the pastor. I think that's really helpful. And one thing you can do, like when I've chunked up these conversations and just made them head south fast,
yeah,
I go straight into what I want them to know, the pit, yeah. Right? Instead, like I really like where you're going with this, Clint, because always when I come back from those conversations, I think to myself, gosh, if I had just been quiet and listened to their heart and let them lead and let them talk. So for example, if I were a planner going into a sending church or even a supporting church to discuss that, I might start with the question about what are you passionate about? Like what yeah. kind of ministries do you like to support? And in integrity, after I listen, I'm assessing for myself whether or not I'm a good fit with the sending church. I'm turning around on its head. And in integrity, I can turn and look at that pastor and say, you know, I don't know if I'm the right fit because I don't know that yeah. I'm going to do any of those things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I can tell you what I am going to do. And just, you know, let other times, you know, like, oh gosh, I wasn't even prepared in my pitch to talk about, but that guy says he's passionate about sex trafficking. We're actually, when we do that business's mission, we're giving all proceeds. It's like, I need to tell them about this. And it's a fit. If you can get them to talk about what they're excited about and find that common ground, that actually, if that is like the gold-plated advice Peyton Jones can give you today, it's that, because that works in all scenarios in life.
Yeah, that's great. You remind me, a church planner should approach a sending church with an inquisitive and learning posture about the work together that they can do. This is not about me. This is not a bank. You're not going to them for a transaction. You're going to them, inviting them into a relationship. Now, I think a lot of church planners don't think about it like that. They're thinking about it very transactional. They're asking the question, what's the minimum amount I have to do? But these churches, if they're going to be meaningful partners, they're going to feel this with you. You don't, you know, when you have a meaningful partnership with somebody, you don't have to solicit them to pray for you. They love you. They are going to pray for you. You don't have to hold the church planner to the fire when it comes to communicating back with the church, because they love one another. They respect one another. And so I really think that going into one of those conversations and just the way you said there with a learning posture is going to make all the difference. One of the questions that I think is really helpful that a church planter should be asking potential sending churches or supporting churches is, you know, what are your church's goals when it comes to mission? Because the reason that question is important is because most pastors that I know genuinely want their churches to be more committed to the mission of God than they currently are. They just don't quite know how to get the congregation there, or maybe they do and they're working on it, but it's a difficult process to get people passionate about things that they don't see in places that they'll never go. And so the pastor has that challenge. You actually have the opportunity to be an ally with that pastor in the success of getting his church excited about the mission of God. And so you want to hear what his pinch points are about doing that, what the pastor's pinch points are about getting the church jazzed about mission. And then you want to show how your relationship with the church can actually be a means to that end, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, I love even where you're saying, what are the goals? And I think a church planner ought to even have the same goals for mission that the sending church has. So for example, one of the things that I often tell planners is, your church plant that you're planning is your Jerusalem, but you're going to need a Judea. You're going to need a public space, like for people outside the walls. That's your Judea.
Yeah.
And then you need a Samaria, which marginalized people. And finally, ends of the earth. From day one, this is getting a little radical here, but I think your church plant ought to be investing globally in the kingdom.
Yeah.
If you can show a potential investor that when they invest in you, it's exponentially going towards global mission, that you're actually, like Paul says, the hardworking farmer is the first to partake of the crops. You know, right. You're actually eating what you're growing. You're coming to him saying, hey, we're doing the same. We're going to be giving out to mission too. You're a lot easier to believe in.
Yeah. Hey, Peyton, have you had in your journey, have you had like one church or one pastor that's just been like the quintessential, like very best partner, like bone of your bone? Who is that?
It's my sending pastor. I mean, he was missions to the core. And that guy, I was his first missionary. He has sent out so many missionaries ever since then. But I mean, he would come visit me on the field.
Yeah.
When I came back, he said, "Hey, you want to plant in urban downtown Long Beach for us?" Like, still to this day. I mean, he's one of my biggest fans, biggest cheerleaders.
Yeah.
And just supports me. Even like this month, they wrote and said, "Hey, what do you need?
Yeah.
What does New Breed need? Let us help you." He has been there for me for 20 something years.
Yeah, and I have somebody, I did not plan that question. We hadn't talked about that ahead of time, but that's my experience too. I have a pastor named Danny Williams in my life. He was my childhood pastor, the church that I became a Christian in. And he began to disciple me after I became a follower of Christ. He taught me about church planting. He's never planted a church himself, but he vicariously planted churches through my life since I was a teenager. And I mean, as of this week, like I say, for my entire ministry, my church has planted 31 churches in our family of churches. Every one of those churches has received some measure of support for him. Our whole network of churches affectionately refers to him as Brother Danny. His wife, Miss Gwen, because they have walked with us through everything that we've ever been through. Every time I faced a difficulty in ministry, he's been there. And every time I have a financial problem, it's his financial problem too. And I just can't say enough how much that relationship has been life-giving to us over the years and to me personally. And that's the kind of thing that we really want to foster. Now, I understand every church can't be that for you. And we've had lots of churches that have supported us on different levels, but I would encourage every church planner to seek a relationship like that. Find somebody who will love you back and love them, you know. And at the end of the month, I'm going to be preaching at First Baptist Church of Lyons, the church he pastors, and they'll be emphasizing our work in the Praetorian Project. And so all of that to say that that's something that's happened many times in the past, will continue to happen. Those members of that congregation see us as sort of their children, and that's the way it should be. And I think every church planner should try to seek something like that. But understand, nobody owes you that. You cultivate that through relationship.
Yeah. One last thing, just on the tail end of what you said there, which is really powerful. If you look at the people you're going to talk to as, like, you know, money bags with arms, legs, and eyes, you're actually missing out on the true value of what Clint just described. You know, when Paul says about Timothy, you know, he's my true son in the faith, you know, immediately I go back to my sinning pastor. If I'm down and out, you know, nobody will lift me up off the pavement like that guy. If he knows I'm going through it, he's there for me. He's a shepherd. Yeah. He's the guy I can go to when things aren't right, just like you described. And I think that very oftentimes what I've learned on my journey in fundraising is fundraising is highly relational. All about the relationship. And it's taken me 20-something years to figure that out, to the point where now I'm actually changing where I don't ever ask for money anymore. Like, maybe I should have written this before I wrote Church Plantology. I'm just now at the point where I'm sharing need and sharing vision. I don't think I had the faith to do that before, but now I'm just investing in relationship and really trusting for the rest. So it's a little bit different, but I know if I invest in the relationships, that's actually the true value, because when you have that, you have everything else. When you just have money, guess what? When they're reviewing on their board who they're going to cut first to invest in someone else, guess who's going first? People with no relationship.
Right. Well, there's actually, you mentioned that, there's actually a really great book on fundraising called Friend Raising that is around that whole idea. Betty Barnett wrote that book. It's an old book, but super helpful for anybody trying to raise resources. So encourage you to check that out. Peyton, as always, incredible to talk to you. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.